Before we get started, a special thank you is in order to our friends over at Stanley Customs. Stanley Customs creates amazing custom sports figurines for all you athletes out there. Right now, our listeners will get 15% off their order, and all interviewees will get 25% off their order simply by going to Stanley_Customs on Instagram and telling them that Globally Ballin sent you. Thank you. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Globally Ballin podcast, a product of the Globally Ballin podcast network. We have a fantastic interview for you today, so sit back and enjoy, and thank you all for joining us one more time. Here's the music. I gotta let you go. Finish the game with a broken hand.
Yeah, finish the game with...
I'm Rio 2016 silver medalist and Asian Games 2018 gold medalist.
Young man, how do you use a celebrity for good? You know, up until that point, most of us as athletes were taught on it, use the celebrity to manipulate, to get a girl, to get famous, to get whatever it is.
We're hours away from kind of the nearest hospital. He ended up losing his leg over.
I don't think a lot of people know the opportunities there are actually to play overseas, especially in the women's category.
Actually broke my neck. I was paralyzed from the waist down, and I was never supposed to walk again, much less be able to play football again.
Had a couple guys get robbed at gunpoint, and one of them was just like, "Jay, get me out."
At the same time, there are some who would still keep their 9-to-5 jobs because the pay for being an athlete isn't enough.
Don't complain when we look like idiots abroad in these big tournaments.
What league or country gave you the best pay contract-wise?
Probably Turkey, my last season.
Okay.
With the 23rd pick in the 2006 NBA draft, the New Jersey Nets select Josh Boone from the University of Connecticut.
Those words you hear are from the late David Stern, former NBA commissioner, and then specifically from the NBA draft in 2006, which leads us into this episode's guest, former UConn Husky and former New Jersey Net, Josh Boone. It's a pleasure to have anybody on the show who was drafted, much less drafted in the first round. Josh had a very successful career at UConn, and as you heard there, was drafted by the New Jersey Nets. He then spent some time in the NBA a few years. I'm going to let him kind of give the specifics on that. But then his career continues somewhere else, and that's mostly what this episode is going to be about. One thing I'd like to note about the interview, specifically with Josh, that I think you're going to come to appreciate is that he has a great sense of honesty when it comes to talking about both the positives and, you know, specifically the negatives that he experienced throughout his time overseas. There's a lot of unfortunate things that happen to us all, but specifically in the context of the show, athletes, probably the first one that comes to your mind is injuries, contract disputes. Josh has a little of everything, and he's gonna tell you about it. Specifics, not holding anything back, which I know is very valuable for you athletes listening out there. You're going to learn something from Josh today. I can tell you that right now. You know, I like college basketball more than the NBA. I like college football more than the NFL. And there's a few of us in the world that feel that way. It's just a thing. I don't know what it is. It might be because I'm from Michigan. So it was, do you like the University of Michigan or do you like the Lions? Pretty simple choice. Anyway, with that comes a scenario that I and people like myself find ourselves in, and that's we'll watch somebody play for 3, maybe 4 years in basketball or football, and we'll come to know them, not personally, but, you know, we see them play all the time, and we think, oh, they are going to be so good. They're going to be good. I mean, they have to be. They were so good in college. They had to at least have a career, and sure enough, maybe they get drafted. Maybe they play a year. Maybe they play 2, but then you stop hearing their name as often. Maybe you stop hearing it altogether, and you think, where are they? I know they still play. I mean, I would think they still play, but I don't see them. I don't hear about them. for some of you, Josh might be that. Very successful career at UConn. Drafted first round. A number of years in the NBA. But eventually, it's a name you don't hear in the NBA because he's not there anymore. But those of you that had watched him, I'm sure were thinking, he's too talented not to be playing. There's no way he's not playing. He's too driven. He was too everything. There's no way he's not playing basketball. And you would be right. But at least before the social media explosion here, this would have been in around 2010 when he stopped playing in the NBA. And you wouldn't really know where he was. Unless you really dug to figure out where he was. Maybe. For a lot of you, you might go, wow, where's he at? I don't know. I would think he's still playing somewhere. You'd be right. You'd be right. And so Josh has, out of all of our guests, I think, probably had the most powerful resume going into international basketball, right? He had a successful career at a successful school. He was drafted first round. He played a couple of years in the NBA. He was good. He wasn't he wasn't a basketball player who couldn't quite make it in the D League, G League, or, you know, was on and off in the D League, G League, and now is going to try their luck overseas. This is a guy who went to a successful college, played successfully there, was drafted early, and played in the NBA. So out of our guests, at least, the most powerful resume. So he's going to give you an element to overseas basketball that we haven't had yet. Talking leagues that we haven't had yet, teams we haven't had yet, scenarios we haven't had yet. And for some of you who ever wondered, what happened to that guy? He's going to answer those questions. He's going to detail his story of where he was, what he was doing, what was going on, what was it like. All of that's going to be detailed for you. But it's more than just Josh's story. This happens a lot. Now, granted, no two stories are the same, but this is going to help fill in some of the blanks when we see a young player in college play really well, get drafted, play a year, maybe two, then we stop hearing from him. Now, social media has changed that a lot because you can follow and figure out what they're doing. But for the most part, we may lose track. This might fill us in, at least generally, what that might look like, what that journey might look like. So special thanks to Josh, our guest, and obviously thank you to all you listeners who are supporting the show. I'm going to let Josh take it away. Enjoy the interview with Josh Boone.
Hello.
Hey, Josh, it's Aaron.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right.
Good, all right. So what we typically do is we, in the past, we talk with athletes, coaches, agents representing a number of sports around the world. Really, the idea is to get an idea of what it was like to play in a specific league in a different area. Mm-hmm. So let's start off, have you just introduce you and what you do or what you did.
My name is Josh Boone. I'm a professional basketball player. I've been playing for, I think, 13 seasons now. Played four in the NBA and have done years in a variety of countries around the world, everywhere from Estonia to Russia to China and back again.
So Josh, where was college ball for you?
I played in college at UConn. Did 3 years at UConn, was lucky enough to win the national championship my freshman year. With some outstanding professionals. Every year I was there, we had five or six guys that were NBA level players. Which was really helpful in terms of preparing me for that next level.
Okay, so then following, how many years were you at UConn? Did you say the four?
Three.
Okay, so following 3 years, entered the NBA draft?
Yes.
Okay, and how'd that go?
It went okay. I was picked 23rd. Overall, I believe, by the New Jersey Nets. Okay. The pick right before me was my teammate, actually, Marcus Williams, my teammate and roommate at UConn. And he went to New Jersey Nets as well. So that was kind of cool that we went, you know, back to back to the same team. Yeah.
Awesome. So you get drafted and go to the Nets. How long are you staying? Were you with the Nets all those years in the NBA?
Yes. All 4 years that I played in the NBA, I was with the Nets. Still in New Jersey at the time. They were looking but that move kept getting pushed back further and further. It was actually supposed to happen while I was there.
Okay.
And I think my third year, I was actually on a billboard in Brooklyn. And to this day, have the billboard. I've never actually looked at it. My girlfriend at the time managed to secure it for me because she was working for the Nets as well, and I didn't know. But I haven't actually opened it up and looked at it. It's just been sitting folded up in my mom's basement for years now. I'll have to look at it someday and see what it actually looks like. I have no idea.
So you're dressed in the old New Jersey Nets look, but you're on a billboard up in Brooklyn.
Yeah, because at the time it was when they were looking to make us move to Brooklyn.
Sure.
The season before that, I had been, I had had a pretty good year. So they were looking to push me as one of the guys, I guess, that would be one of the faces.
Okay, so you go 4 years with the Nets. How do you go from on a billboard drafted 23rd with the Nets 4 years to out of the NBA?
After my last season, the Nets did not pick up my qualifying offer. And I had a lot of teams that told me they were going to make me offers. I had one team in particular that told me three times during that summer that they would be presenting me with a contract before the end of the week. And all three times it never happened. And then I ended up getting invited by the Cavaliers to camp, discovered that the situation was a bit different than I had anticipated. And at the time I had a fully guaranteed contract for NBA level money on the table from a team in China. So I decided that I was going to take that contract.
And that, I'm glad it makes sense that China's your next step, because China deals with a lot of money, right? So, I mean, I'm sure you could speak with that. You just said it, your NBA level contract financially in China. China can pull people over there pretty easily, at least financially. So let's take that jump from the NBA going over to China. Who'd you sign with?
I signed with Zhejiang Chouzhou was the name of the team. And yeah, China tends to be a place that guys coming out of the NBA tend to gravitate towards. And it's mainly because they pay the most. They're always looking for NBA names because they really go on your name there. If you're a guy that's kind of played overseas for a number of years, it's much harder for you to get there than for someone who is fresh out of the NBA, because they want that name recognition. They want someone that's going to draw the fans over there. So they usually tend to go for those bigger name guys.
And that actually piggybacks off what I'm going to ask is, the NBA, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's more than just money. It's a feel of being an NBA player, right? I mean, you know you're in the NBA. People recognize you, all that kind of stuff. There's so much more than just the amount of money you get while playing in the NBA. So not only does China give you that contract and that financial kind of stability that you might get in the NBA, but what about the feeling as a player? Do you feel like a professional on the high level? Are people recognizing you? Are you getting a lot of the other perks that maybe you got when you're in the NBA, that kind of stuff?
I mean, there's, as you said, so much that goes along with being an NBA player. There's so many additional things that you have access to that you just don't have playing anywhere else. We're still recognized over there for sure. And, myself not being a very big NBA name, I didn't really get it as much. My second year in China, however, I had J.R. Smith as my teammate, and he definitely got the royal treatment over there in terms of just, people recognizing him, chasing him down the street, trying to get autographs. I saw that multiple times. So for somebody like him, it's certainly a bit different situation than for somebody like me, who was just, a mid-level to low-level NBA player having over there.
So J.R. Smith was your teammate year two. What was the rule as far as how many foreigners they could have on the team in that league?
Two imports only, and one team had zero imports. That was Baiyi, the army team. And then the bottom three, maybe four teams from the previous year were allowed a third import that had an Asian passport. But most of the time, that would be an American guy that just happened to have dual citizenship.
Yeah.
That was how it would go most of the time. It wasn't everybody. There was a couple of guys I saw that were legitimately from Asian countries. But for the most part, it was just American that happened to have dual citizenship somewhere else.
Okay, so how many years were you in China?
I did two full seasons, and then I did the first four games, I think, of the third season. And they cut me. At the time, I was leading the league in rebounding. I was second and block shots, and our team was 3-1, and they decided to cut me.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make any sense. What was the rationale for that? Financial?
No, it certainly wasn't financial. No, they brought in Eddie Curry. They were able to procure Eddie Curry's services, who hadn't been playing for a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken. But, as I said, they go off of names, and they decided that they wanted his name instead of mine. So they cut me, brought him out less than 2 months later, I think it was maybe a month later or so, called me back and told me that they wanted me back for twice as much money.
So you ended up going back, I assume?
No, I wasn't able to. I decided to go to the D League, now called G League.
Okay, yeah.
And at the end of my second game in the D League, I injured my knee. The next morning after I injured my knee was when the Chinese team called me back.
Oh no.
But I knew my knee was bad. I didn't know how bad it was at the time, but I knew it was pretty bad.
You had this sense, yeah.
So, you know, basically what happened was they called me back. They said they'd give me double what I was on before. I told them triple, knowing that they wouldn't go for it. If they had gone for it, I'd have figured out a way to get over there. I knew they wouldn't go for it. So I ended up, I had, when I went to the G League, I had met the team in Maine. They had a back-to-back in Maine. So I did those two games, and the second game was when I got injured. I flew back to New Jersey to get my things, and then I flew out to Iowa to meet the team out there the next day and wasn't able to practice. A couple of days later, I got an MRI, and that was when I was told that I had torn cartilage in my knee and was going to need microfracture surgery. As any athlete knows, that's a surgery you don't want, because that's a very low return to sport rate.
So technical question, when you left China, was there any sort of fee they had to pay to cut you, or are they more day-to-day type contracts, or is it like you're in for the season, so if they're going to cut you, they got to pay you?
Yeah, it all depends on the guy and the year and the team. My first 2 years there, my contract was fully guaranteed for the entire season.
Okay.
My last year there, it was only guaranteed month to month. So it all depends. I think they've changed the rules there now. I think they're only month to month for everybody, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think you can get a fully guaranteed contract there anymore.
Okay, so how long were you out then with the knee?
So the way the timeline worked with my knee injury, I injured it in the very end of January. I had surgery somewhere around February 1st. I had a secondary surgery in April, and I was back on the court in June. This is usually a 9 to 12 month recovery.
Wow.
And then I was back on the court in 4, I guess.
Wow.
But it was a mistake, because I wasn't ready. I ended up going to Washington, D.C. to potentially do summer league with the Wizards in July. And I made it through the first 3 days of practice. And then the next day we were supposed to leave for Vegas, my knee blew up and I was not able to run. So I had to come home and start rehab again. The team basically told me, you know, go home, get rehabbing, get your knee right, and we'll see about training camp. Usually when teams tell you that, it means it's not gonna happen. But amazingly, I not only heard from the Washington Wizards in, I think it was August, but I also heard from the Indiana Pacers, who hadn't seen me in years. And both of them wanted to bring me to training camp. Unfortunately, I was still not able to get back on the court and had to tell both of them no. And from the time I left DC in, I think it was either late June or early July, whenever Vegas starts, from that time until December, I was not able to run again, because my rehab just plateaued and I wasn't getting any better and didn't know if I was ever going to be able to play again, quite honestly.
I tell you, all these interviews, injuries are by far the worst news that ever I get in the interviews, because it's so sad. It's such a journey and you're fighting to get back to where you want to be, and then something happens like that. But at least I know you get to continue playing. So what happens after the injury? What's the next place you are?
After the injury, following February or March, I think it was February, I managed to get a contract in the Philippines.
Okay.
Went out to the Philippines, played 2 games out there, and was cut. Those 2 games, the first game I had 15 points, 15 rebounds, and we won by 20. The second game I had 32 points, 21 rebounds, and we won by 15 against our rival team. And I was cut the day after that game.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make sense, because you're coming from China, playing in the G League, you're getting shot at the D League at the time, and your next step being the Philippines. The numbers say you should dominate, and it sounds like you were, at least pretty well. So did you get rationale for that or not?
Well, I would say 32 points and 21 rebounds in a game is dominating in any world in this any league.
Yeah, you are right.
Where you could be, you know, playing against a school for the blind, that's still dominating. The rationale was my third day over there. The third, usually when I do these overseas trips, it takes about 5 days for me to fully adjust to the time zones. And the third and fourth days are really bad for me. That's when I'm going through it the most in terms of like my body trying to. So the third day I was over there, we had a preseason game against one of the other teams, and I did not play well during that preseason game. And the Philippines season is very short. I think it's only like 14 or 15 games, something like that. Mm-hmm. So the team panicked and they bought someone out of their D-League contract before I was able to actually play either one of those games. So that preseason game happened on like Wednesday. Say it was like a Tuesday or Wednesday. They bought the guy out within the next 2 days. And then our first games were Friday and Sunday. Saturday and Monday. And what the team told my agent was that, yeah, because I had heard about them buying the guy out, like news travels fast in this business and social media ruins everything. So I had already heard that they had bought somebody out and they were looking to release me. What the team said was that they wanted me to play those two games. And if I played well enough in those two games, then they would keep me. Obviously that wasn't the case because I couldn't have really played any better than I did in that second game. And the first game, the only reason I had 15 and 15 was because I had foul trouble and had to sit out a good portion of the second half. So clearly that wasn't really the case. You know, the fact is they spent 45 grand on a buyout plus whatever the salary was for the guy that they brought in, and they didn't want to waste the money. That's what it came down to.
Right, because what you're saying then is they bought this guy out during that preseason game that he didn't play, or right after, before they got to see the other two games, and they said they're going to get rid of this guy and keep you depending on the games, and then they end up getting rid of you anyway.
Yeah, because they already spent the money on the other guy, and they didn't want to waste the money. It was too late for them to go back. If they hadn't have had to pay the D-League buyout for him, then there's no telling. The odds are they probably would have kept me. You know, the media was going crazy over there after that second game, and then they still cut me the day after.
Yeah, because they probably could have still gotten out of the contract. It's the buyout that probably burned them pretty bad. But
it was all about the buyout.
Yeah, definitely. I think. All right, so short stint in the Philippines. Where do you go next?
I came home. I went back to the D-League, went back to the Iowa Energy, and finished that season out there. I think there was like 10 or 11 regular season games left, and then the playoffs. So we made the playoffs, but we lost in the first round.
How's your knee at this point? Is it something that's in the back of your mind? Are coaches thinking about it? Is it ever coming up during contract negotiations or anything like that?
You know, the thing about that Philippines trip for me, mentally, it was a killer. You know, I worked so hard to get back. It took me really an entire year to recover from this injury. I didn't know if I was going to play again. I lost a lot during that time frame. And for me, it was kind of a double-edged sword because it was devastating that I'd worked so hard only to be, you know, released and not know where I was going to end up again. But B, it showed me that I could still play. You know, it showed me that my knee had recovered enough that I was still able to do the things that I was used to doing as a player and potentially even become better, which is what ended up happening. So, you know, it was comforting for me to know that I could still play.
Yeah, and definitely coming off an injury like that, knowing, and I can see that, but it's got to be such a wear on you to get sent off on that note, you know, when you had all the hype of coming back to play. I can't imagine having the physical injury draw me down, but also that that mental and emotional drawdown of getting shipped out so fast.
The mental part was tough, and especially because from there, when I went back to the D-League, I ended up on a team that the rotation was pretty much set, and it was very difficult for me to kind of get in and get minutes. There were spurts here and there where I'd play, and during the playoffs, I played more, but it was tough, man. It was tough. I was thinking about leaving the team at one stage because I just didn't want to be there. I was miserable in Iowa, you know, and kind of just by myself in Des Moines, you know, not living in a great apartment, not playing, you know, had just been sent home from Philippines. So yeah, you know, I really wasn't in a very good state at that point.
So what is the next offer that rolls around after you spend some time in Iowa?
So after the Iowa season finishes, I don't really hear much for most of the spring into the summer, things are pretty quiet. And then I get a phone call from a guy named Sam Vincent. He was a former NBA player, played a number of years in the league, was the head coach of the Charlotte Bobcats when I was playing in New Jersey for a year. And he also happened to be one of the assistant coach my second year over in China. He was brought over specifically for J.R. Smith to try and, you know, keep J.R. on the straight and narrow. So Sam gives me a call and he says, look, I'm coaching a team in the Middle East and we need an import. And if you're healthy, I want it to be you. So I ended up taking that offer, not knowing a damn thing about the country I was going to, which was Bahrain in the Middle East.
Oh, that's a new one. We haven't gotten that one yet. We've gotten a lot of them. We haven't gotten that one yet.
I would imagine you won't hear too many people going to Bahrain, though.
So how was it? You get there, you roll up. What's your first impression getting there?
It was amazing. It really was. First impression was, where is everyone? Because we got into the main city. Bahrain is a very, very small island country. There's really one major city in it, which is Manama. And we rolled into Manama. There's all these massive apartment complexes. You know, I'm talking 30, 40 story complexes.
Yeah.
And there's nobody out during the day. So I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, where is everybody? Are these just built and there's nobody here? As it turns out, everybody just stays inside during the day because it's so hot. You know, it's in the middle of the desert heat. So you're talking 105, 110 during the day. So nobody goes outside. Everybody just gets food delivered. And you don't really see anyone out until the evening time, which was what, you know, I obviously didn't know that first day or two that I was there. And then people started to explain to me. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. But it was great. It was a great experience. It brought me back to loving the game of basketball because that previous 2 years had just kind of taken everything out of me. But that season was amazing. My teammates were great. Having Sam as a coach was extremely helpful because we had a really, really good relationship. And the fans were phenomenal over in Bahrain. I've got some videos of some of the stuff they used to do, and it's pretty incredible. You won't really see it many other places in terms of basketball fan. They're more akin to how high-level European soccer fans are.
Wow.
That's what their basketball fans are. Now, granted, certainly not to the number of those big European soccer clubs because the stadium that we played in was very small, but they would pack that stadium and they would be chanting the entire game. I remember during the finals we were playing, it was one of the games, I think it was maybe game one, when we came out for our warm-ups, it was pretty incredible. Because, you know, it's a fully packed stadium, you know, a couple thousand people in there, standing room only. And our fans would start a chant, and on the beat of their chant ending, as soon as that chant stopped, the other team's fans would start their own chant. And it would go back and forth, like it went back and forth like that the entire warm-up stream. It was pretty amazing. It really was. You know, I still have a couple of the videos, and I look at them from time to time just to, you know, get a smile on my face and just remind myself how crazy it was to play there.
So were you playing other teams in Bahrain, or was it out in that, was it like a Middle East league?
It was just the Bahraini league, but after we won the Bahraini league, we went to what's called the GCC, which is a tournament that they have where they bring in the best teams from every country in the region. So like the best team from Kuwait, the best Saudi team, the best Omani team, Qatari team, Bahraini team, maybe one other country as well. There's like eight teams there total. A couple of countries will get two teams in, like the host country will have two teams, and then usually there's a second team from one of the higher ranking countries. But that's the only international play that we do.
All right, so were you there for the entire season?
Yeah, okay. I played the whole season.
And how did that?
We won every championship. We had three championships throughout the year. We won all three of the championships. I was best import there, MVP there. You know, we kind of swept everything that year. The GCC, we ended up getting third. We probably could have won it. We played the team that won it in the finals. It was a team from Dubai, and they had a couple of former NBA players on their team, Sam Young and Czech Sam, and they were very good. They at the end of the day, they were just bigger than us, and it was still a close game. But they ended up beating us. They made one run in the third quarter, and we just kind of never recovered from it. But still played very well. We beat a Qatari team twice, that I don't think any Bahraini team had ever beaten, and we managed to beat them twice. Wow. We beat them in pool play, and then we beat them again in the consolation game for third place. So it was an extremely successful season.
That's awesome. What's the import rule for Bahrain, or what was it? Was it just one?
Just one during the season, and then for GCC, you can add a second.
Oh, awesome. What comes next after Bahrain?
After Bahrain was Estonia, actually. I ended up going to Estonia. There was a team there named Kalev Cramo that I went to play for. And the main reason I went there was because they played in the Russian VTB League, which is one of the better leagues in the world. VTB League includes Himki from Russia, it includes CSKA from Russia, it includes Avdador, it includes Lokomotiv. So there's some very high level teams in that league, as well as my agent viewed it as a great way to get exposure in that league.
Sure.
The Estonian league wasn't quite as good. And usually we wouldn't, like when I say we, I mean the imports, usually wouldn't play quite as much in the Estonian league because we didn't really need to. Like there was really only one other team that was comparable to our team in Estonia, and those games we would play a lot. But other than that, we tended to kind of, the coach would sit us as much as he could in those games. But the VTB league, obviously, played.
Why would they spend the money on an import? And I guess they're doing it for the other league then, right? Because why else would they spend the money on the import if they don't really need you for a lot of the games?
For the VTB.
Yeah, okay.
VTB league.
And how long?
And that's not to say they don't need us. Like, yeah. We still play. We just didn't play the whole game or anything like that.
Sure. All right. How long was that season in Estonia?
Well, it would have been 9 months. But what ended up happening was that I got bought out by Khimki in Russia, which is one of the two biggest clubs in all of Russia. They bought me out. They had a couple of guys get injured and they needed somebody to come in. And at the time, I believe I was leading the VTB in rebounding. And I was top two or three in overall efficiency for the league. So I was having a great year in Estonia. So they ended up buying me out. There was some things that went on in Estonia as well. And, you know, the buyout from Russia probably was about the best thing that could happen at the time. But yeah, I ended up finishing that season with Khimki for the last 6 months of the year. And at the time, Khimki was also in EuroLeague. So that was cool as well.
Oh, yeah. So you briefly just kind of mentioned there may have been some downsides in Estonia. Was that like a team thing or league issues or what are we talking?
I didn't feel that the organization wanted to win enough for a variety of reasons. And then there was a game maybe a month before I got bought out. I was very unhappy at the time. And I went out, we were playing NSA from Russia. And I had 23 points and 20 rebounds in that game. And as soon as the game was over, I went upstairs and I met with the entire management and the coaching staff. And I said, look, you know, there's some things that need to change here. You know, we're not winning. So I'm missing out on a lot of my money. Like I took a pay cut to go there in overall salary, but I was supposed to be able to make it up on win bonuses. I was supposed to go for every win that we had in the VTB league. But unfortunately, we weren't winning games because we needed another player that we didn't have. So I had been trying to get them to get a player in this position for a couple of months and they didn't want to listen to me. They didn't want to spend the money. So, you know, because of that, because of a couple of other things, we were losing games. So I was like, look, you know, I'm pretty unhappy right now. I was like, my payments are late every month. I don't know when I'm getting paid. So these things have to change. And if they don't change, then I'm going to leave. And I told them, I was like, you know, if these three things happen, if I know when I'm getting paid, if you guys go out and get this other player so that we can be competitive in this VTB league, and if I can find a way to negate me losing all of this money through not getting win bonuses, then I'll stay. I'll tell my agent to stop looking right now. But if you guys don't do these things, I have to leave. You know, it just doesn't make sense for me to be here. And to their credit, they said, look, you know, you'll get paid half your money on the first, half your money on the 15th. If it's late, we'll pay you a late fee. They promised they were going to go out and get another player, which they did. And they said, as far as my win bonuses went, they would change my contract so that even if we didn't win that game, if I managed to get a double-double in that particular game, I would still get my win bonus. Okay. And at the time, I was averaging a double-double. So for me, that was perfect. And then maybe a week later, Kimke called back. And Kimke had actually been in touch a few weeks before that. We had told them a number money-wise, and they weren't willing to meet it. So we said no. So I stayed in Estonia. A week after the Estonian team made these concessions to me, Kimke called again and said, hey, we're willing to come up to this number, and ended up buying me out anyway. So I ended up leaving Estonia even after they decided to actually meet the agreement. They actually still owe me half of a month's pay that I've never gotten. But
how long ago was that?
5 years ago? 5-6 years ago now? Yeah.
Is it still a team where you played?
Yes. Yep. They're still going. They're still in VTB as well.
I actually just finished Paul Shirley's book. He wrote about, he played all over the country. And the reason I say it is because one of his last chapters, he talked about his time in Russia and he hated it. So I'm going to ask you about your experience, but he makes jokes all the time in his book, but he absolutely hated his time in Russia. How was your time in Russia?
How old is he?
That would have been probably late 2000s, before 2010.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know how old he was and if he was in VTB or not. Because there's another Russian league. I think the Super League was going on around that time.
All right, so Paul Shirley is 42 today.
Yeah, so he was probably playing in the Super League and not the VTB.
Okay.
But I loved my time in Russia. I kind of was in and out of significant playing time. Like when I would play, I'd play very well, but sometimes I wasn't playing. We were pretty loaded. Honestly, that team was very loaded. We had a number of really good big guys on that team.
Okay.
And VTB rules were that we could only play a certain number of players, as was EuroLeague as well. So somebody always had to sit. So there was kind of a rotation as far as that went. And then even, you know, when I dress, sometimes I would play and I'd play really well. Sometimes I'd start. Sometimes I wouldn't really play. That's kind of how Europe is a lot of times. You know, for a lot of guys, you're not necessarily getting consistent high amount of playing time. But when I did play, I played very well. So yeah, I really enjoyed being in Russia. I enjoyed living over there as well. Really liked the Russian people, got along with them very well. The Estonians used to say some things about the Russians, and as it turned out, it was kind of the exact opposite, where the Estonians, at least some of them that I met, were a little bit more like what they were saying the Russians were than the Russians actually were, which was kind of funny to me. But yeah, I really enjoyed Russia a lot. I really did.
And so how long were you, did you just wrap up that season? Did you go there for another season? How long was your time in Russia?
Yeah, I just wrapped up that season. I played the last 6 months of the season over in Russia.
Okay, and did you said they were in the EuroLeague as well? So whereabouts would you go and play then? Are we spanning all over Europe, the teams all over Europe?
Yeah, EuroLeague is the best league in the entire world outside of the NBA. So you're talking CSKA Moscow, you're talking Fenerbahce from Turkey, you're talking Real Madrid and Barcelona from Spain. You know, those huge soccer clubs are the clubs that are in EuroLeague for the most part.
Hey everybody, this episode is brought to you by an additional sponsor. We are now also brought to you by Creating Young Minds. Creating Young Minds is a nonprofit out of Lewisville, Texas, right outside of Dallas. You may remember we've had an episode in the past with the founders of Creating Young Minds, Dr. Shira Ackerman and Coach Mathis Crowder. Creating Young Minds strives to help young men achieve success in their life where they may not have otherwise achieved that success. One way they do this is through their new basketball team. The Lewisville Yellow Jackets, affiliated with Creating Young Minds, play in TBL, the basketball league. And through a combination of their nonprofit as well as their basketball team, Creating Young Minds and the Lewisville Yellow Jackets are doing their best to bring the European model of basketball to the United States. That is Creating Young Minds. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, basically everywhere. Find Creating Young Minds, check them out, see what they're all about. And when the TBL league rolls around once again, keep an eye out for the Lewisville Yellow Jackets. Thank you.
All right. So after Russia's done, what comes next for you?
After Russia, the next season, I go to Turkey and I play for Pinar Karşıyaka.
Okay.
For a couple of months.
Okay. Did you come late or leave early?
I left early. Okay. I went over there. I injured my shoulder during preseason. I was not given time to heal my shoulder. They kept telling me, oh, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. One doctor that I saw told me I had a torn labrum. Other doctors, the team doctor, said there was nothing wrong with me. They gave me 3 days off, I believe. And it was to the point where I couldn't lift my arm. I was basically playing with one arm for the second half of preseason and the first regular season game. They cut me after the first regular season game because my shoulder just wasn't healed. And they didn't give me time when they should have during the preseason to let me heal. After the game, I actually called my agent and I said, look, it doesn't seem like this is a very good situation. We may want to look at, you know, kind of getting me out of here. He was like, just play the next couple, see what happens, and then we'll talk about it. I said, okay. The following day, the GM called me into his office and I walked in. And as soon as I walked in, everybody else in the office stood up and walked out. So before they'd even shut the door, I looked at the GM. I was like, really, this is what we're going to do right now? He's like, yeah, you know, it wasn't my decision. It was his decision.
Who else is going to decide that?
Listen, you know, there's not too many people that I would just openly speak negative about. You know, I've learned over the years that you don't burn bridges. You know, yes. You never know who you're going to need in this business. The general manager for this team is the shadiest person I've ever dealt with in the entire business. And to this day, that team still owes me a large amount of money. I won my FIBA court case against them a couple of years ago, and I've only been paid maybe half of what I was owed, and I'm still trying to get that other portion of that money. They have done everything they can to avoid paying me. And now I think they've irritated FIBA because they haven't paid FIBA their fines that they owed for all of the late payments towards me.
Okay, so that's really important. You're the first one we've gotten that has, we've had people that like late payments or whatever and basically just bailed. You're the first one to take it to FIBA, win the case. And so now
I did the whole process. And,
yeah.
And the craziest part, so my contract with that team was fully guaranteed. In injury notwithstanding, even if I couldn't walk, my contract was guaranteed. They were not able to cut. What they decided they were going to do was, the GM told me, he was like, well, you know, we know your contract's guaranteed. We want to renegotiate. If you don't want to renegotiate, we will keep your rights. We will keep you here. You will not be able to play even if you are injured, and you will just have to be here, and we'll pay you, but you won't be able to go anywhere else. And that's that. I had to get home to see my surgeon. He was only going to be in the area for a finite amount of time. And if I didn't get back soon enough, I was going to miss him. So I decided to take a buyout. And my buyout was supposed to be, I was supposed to be paid up until the time I was there, along with, I believe, it was either one or two months extra, because I was like, look, you know, I don't know how long it's going to take me to find another job. I don't know how long my shoulder is going to take to heal. So based on the fact that I'm supposed to have this guaranteed money anyway, just give me 2 months so that I am okay financially for the next couple of months while I'm trying to deal with my shoulder and figure out a job. You know, they signed the agreement, they agreed to it, whatever. They paid me my first month that I was owed, and then didn't pay me the second month that I was owed. I messaged the GM multiple times while I was home, and before they paid me the first one, he was very responsive. After they paid me the first one, when they were late on the second one, he stopped responding to me. And for close to a year, I was sending him messages like, look, I will take this to FIBA if you guys don't pay me this money. Like, it's black and white, it's on the contract. I took this stupid buyout anyway when I didn't need to. Just pay me the money so that we can move on. And the guy never responded to my message. Never. So after a couple of years, I was like, yeah, I'm going to pursue this thing. So I ended up taking it to FIBA. My lawyer won the case for me 2 years ago. And I've been paid a quarter of what my settlement was. And I'm still waiting for the rest of that money.
Okay, so we don't need to get specifics on how much it was unless you want to, but I do want to say for anybody listening that we've had some other guys that played overseas, and they have talked their money. And if anyone's listening having that in their head, they need to know that there's a huge range on how much you can make overseas. So for certain athletes, I'm assuming for your caliber, when we're talking 1 month not getting money, that's actually a lot more than what I think a lot of people have in their heads right now. So
I mean, I don't know that people really understand how much we get paid overseas. I don't think they have any
idea.
This
is why I do this.
And I think it's actually the opposite. I believe that most people would think that we're getting a little more than we actually are. And actually, when I came home from Turkey, I started a blog and I did 5 or 6 posts. And the purpose of the blog was specifically to educate people on what actually happens to players overseas, what we actually go through, as opposed to what you might think we go through based on, it's professional sports, so it's like the NBA. No, it's not like the NBA. It's nothing like the NBA. And the fact is, the vast majority of NBA players probably wouldn't survive overseas just because it's so different. It's such a different animal. It's such a different lifestyle. Like in the NBA, it's nice because your contracts are guaranteed. When you're overseas, like, you're potentially playing for your job every single day. So these guys are savages over there. Like, you have to be a savage because you don't know if tomorrow you're going to come into work and they're just going to say, yeah, we don't want you anymore. We're just not going to pay you anymore. Because that's happened to me 3 times now for really no reasons that were my own fault.
And that's why we love getting people like you on, is because there's so much about it that people don't understand. The savage part is so important. It's a daily thing. And even if you're in the fight daily, as hard as you've ever fought and as successful as you've ever fought, the rug still might be pulled out from under you.
Yeah. Look at what happened to me in the Philippines and in China.
Exactly.
Wasn't like I was playing poorly in either one of those places, and yet I was still cut.
So after your time, you leave after Russia. Oh, I'm sorry. We're in Turkey. After Turkey, where are you?
After Turkey, I come home. I'm home for about 2 months or so. I came home somewhere in October.
Was it the labrum? Did it turn out to be?
So thankfully, I did not actually tear anything. And all I needed was about 2 weeks of doing nothing.
Okay.
And I was fine. But the team just wasn't willing to give me that. During the preseason, when games doesn't matter. That's beside the point. So yeah, I came home, was home for 2 months looking for a job, didn't know where I was going to go. Towards the middle of December, there was some talk of potentially a team in Dubai being an option. Didn't actually come through. I want to say it was December 22nd or so. At this point, by the way, I've had to move out of my apartment and I'm living with my cousin at the time because my lease was up on my apartment. I had no idea when I was going to be making money again. I had no idea when I was going to have to leave again. So I wasn't able to get another place. So I ended up living with him for a couple of weeks there. So sitting at the table, at the dinner table, about to have dinner on, I think it was December 21st or 22nd, about 4 or 5 days before Christmas. And I get a phone call from my agent and he says, are you sitting down? I'm like, yeah, I'm sitting down. What's going on? And he says, well, there's a team in Australia and they had a couple of guys get hurt. They need somebody to come out there and fill in. They said it could end up being the rest of the season. They don't know for sure yet, but it'll at least be a temporary thing. He says, the catch is you need to leave tomorrow.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, this is like 7 o'clock at night. So I'm like, okay. Okay. The team actually was not able to get my visa done and get me on a flight the next day. So I left the day after that. I left 2 days after that. Had the trip from hell trying to get out to Australia. A trip that was supposed to take 25 hours took 52. I won't go into that whole trip if you don't have the time. But I managed to finally make it out to Australia, to Melbourne, Australia. Got out there. I think it was Christmas Day, maybe I actually got out there and my shoes did not arrive. I had an entire bag that had all of my basketball gear on it and my shoes did not get there. And I was supposed to be playing the next day on the 26th. So,
thankfully. Well, so you talk day to day real quick. And we just had an episode with a baseball guy. He was up in you'll be able to relate to this. He was up camping with his family and he gets this call from Taiwan that's like, yeah, we need you to play baseball in 2 days. He's like, and he's like, first of all, he's like, he didn't even know that was going to happen. But the other thing was his passport was expired. So every single person we've talked with, they've had this. Nobody's been next day like you, but they've been, it's like within a week.
And that's the way a lot of these deals work. You know, I've been fortunate enough that a few times I've actually gotten deals done in the late spring and had a few months to prepare. But I've also had times like this where it was literally the day after they wanted to. And especially if you're signing with a team in the middle of the season.
Oh, yeah.
Usually it's, you know, a day or two is all you have. And then you're out of there.
All right. So you finally get to Australia. You're supposed to play the next day. You have no gear. I don't know how you work with that.
So I got lucky and they managed to put my bag on the flight, the same flight that I had taken that day, the next day. So my gear, my shoes and everything got there at like 10:30 in the morning, the day of the game. So I was able to actually play in the game, which was good.
All right. So how long did you end up wrapping up the entire season in Australia?
So I did. I ended up playing the rest of that season with this team, Melbourne United. And I was not initially going to be able to. So the way that the Australian League works, they have their salary cap. They have the top five players on the team are only allowed to make a certain salary. And
combined?
After, like, it's some confusing rule. I forget exactly what it was, but based on the salaries, they were not going to be able to keep me past a certain day.
Huh.
Like 3 days before that deadline, one of our other guys that was in that top five of salaries, one of our other imports, got injured and was out for the year. So they kept me on as the full injury replacement for him.
I see.
If it wasn't for him getting injured, I would have had to go home like less than a week later. But because he got injured and was not able to play for the rest of the season, they were able to keep me for the rest of that season.
Okay. All right. So how long did that rest of the season end up?
We finished up in February. So I was there for about 2 months or so. We finished, I think, a game and a half out of the playoffs. When I got there, we were 4 or 5 games out of the playoffs and barely missed the playoffs by the end of the year.
All right. Following Australia, where were you?
So Australia is kind of where I stayed.
Okay.
I left once I finished that season in Australia, that first, you know, 2 month season or whatever, I went out to Hong Kong. Okay. And I played with a team in Hong Kong in the ABL, the ASEAN Basketball
yes.
League, for okay. the rest of the season. And we ended up winning the championship that year.
Okay, what team was that? Hong Kong?
That was the Hong Kong Eastern Long Lions.
Okay.
They actually, their owner also owns a CBA team as well down in Foshan.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I finished their season out, won the championship there, which was awesome. First time that the team had won the championship. I think it's their first, maybe even their first year in the league, if I remember correctly.
How do you pronounce the league?
ASEAN.
Okay.
ASEAN.
Pronounce it so Midwestern, just say ASEAN.
It's the same thing. Like my team was in Melbourne, Australia, but we would look at it and say Melbourne.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what I said up until this second. I would say yeah. Melbourne. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. So after you after ASEAN, which for anybody that it's awesome because it's a bunch of countries in the Asian Southeast Asian region, which is cool, mm-hmm. and it yep. brings a level of hype and prestige when you win for sure.
Yep.
All right. Do you go back to Australia?
Yeah. So before I was even finished in Hong Kong, I had re-signed with my team in Melbourne. They really wanted me. they re-signed myself and our point guard within 2 months of the season ending, which,
wow.
you know, they basically got the deal done as soon as free agency started. And, you know, that's pretty impressive because that doesn't usually happen. Our point guard, a guy named Casper Ware, had actually just gotten there maybe a month or so before I arrived, you know, 3 weeks to a month or so before I arrived. And once both of us were there, the team started winning, you know, we started playing much better. So they really, you know, could see that the two of us had a very, very good relationship and wanted to keep us together. So they did. And it was a good thing because that next year we won the championship. And both of us ended up making the first team All NBL. So they were pretty happy with that result there. at the time.
Wow, very good. So how long were you in Australia?
I actually am still playing in Australia, although I don't know if I'll be there this year. But I did that last part of that first season that I went with Melbourne, and then I did two additional seasons. We won the second year, and we lost in the finals my third year there. Okay. And then after that last season, I ended up with the Illawarra Hawks, which is another team there. They're in Wollongong, which is south of Sydney. And my teammate there was, actually I had two pretty big name teammates. One of them was a guy that's played in the NBA for 13 years, Aaron Brooks.
Yep.
And my other teammate was a guy that you're going to see in the NBA for a very long time in LaMelo Ball.
Really?
So yeah, that was interesting.
Were the cameras around him like it seems like they always are, or was that just hype from over here?
Cameras were banned for most of our practices.
Because of him?
The reason that LaMelo was there was to try and get away from all of that. He and his family and his manager decided that they wanted him to have a year of playing professionally at a high level where he could just focus on basketball, where he could focus on getting better as a basketball player, getting stronger physically, and, you know, maturing emotionally and mentally. So given that, they tried to keep all of the distractions as far away as they possibly could.
Smart.
His father actually only came out twice.
Okay.
And both of the times that he came out, he was really only there at one or two games and was not actually with us during practices or anything like that. You know, he was very removed from the team. And when he came to the games, he was great. He was, you know, signed a ton of autographs. He was, they put him on the mic at one point and he was saying how much he loved Wollongong and everything. You know, he was awesome. He struck me as a guy that, you know, certainly gets an interesting rap based on his media portrayal.
Oh yeah.
But I think there's actually a relatively genuine, sincere person underneath that. And that's the same thing with LaMelo. You know, I think LaMelo gets a really bad rap just because of who he is. But in actuality, he's a really good kid. He really is. I was really impressed with the kid's character while he was there.
So we're going to see him in the NBA for a while?
Yeah. He'll be a top five pick this year. And he's going to be very good for a very long time.
All right. So yeah, one thing.
I've had numerous conversations with NBA teams regarding him.
Oh, really?
He's going to be very good, yeah.
One thing we love to do, especially with guys that have been all over the place, like you were definitely up on that list, is I like to, I'll say a situation like team doctors, and you just point me to the league that was best in that situation. Now, I want to withdraw Australia because you're there. I don't want any sort of, you know.
Technically, as I said, I'm not necessarily going back this year. Because of everything going on with the global situation, I think is like the politically correct term for it now. They have drastically changed their rules next year. Players have taken massive pay cuts and they have cut the imports down from 3 to 2, which seriously limits the options for me this year. Okay. So I would like to go back there again, but the odds of me ending up back there are probably pretty low at this point, if I'm being realistic.
All right, well then we can put Australia in there. That good. That just adds to the information for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's do, well, the first one we're going to start with, we're obviously going to cut out the NBA and China because you said it was close. And so financially, which one was one of the best contracts?
If you're looking at overall, EuroLeague is going to be the best.
Okay.
But for me personally, actually, I've been playing at a pretty even level in terms of money ever since I signed the contract in Turkey.
And
so Turkey, Australia, a team that I was just with in Dubai, you know, really all of them are very similar in terms of the amount of money I was making.
Well, once you get to the level that you were at, you probably have a lot more leeway as far as your agent to just say a number and they can either take it or leave it.
No, there's still a fair amount of of negotiation that goes on, trust me.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense. Okay, so how about fandom? Your experience with the fans, either in the games or outside, but more probably most specifically while playing in the games, fandom, what league?
There's really three, and they're all very, very different in how they were. Bahrain, obviously, I already told you about, but you know, you're only talking 2,000 fans in the arena because the arena is very small. The Hong Kong fans were great as well, but once again, you're talking a lower number of fans. And then the Melbourne United fans in Australia were phenomenal. And you know, our arena there was like, what was it, like 11,000 something? I think it was just under 11,000, and we were selling out most of our games.
How about team doctors, or you know, your health as far as how it's covered by the team in the league?
I would have to say Australia. I would have to say they were the furthest along. Australia is, you know, next to EuroLeague, Australia is the closest to the NBA. You know, you've seen the Australian league have this huge resurgence over the last probably 4 or 5 years now. Their owner has done a great job of really transforming that league into a global power. You know, now everybody knows about Australia. You know, you've got almost all of the imports over there are guys with NBA experience by this time. You know, you've got guys like Andrew Bogut playing as locals in that league right now. You know, they've done a great job of really turning that league into one of the premier leagues in the entire world. And to give you an example, my second year that my Melbourne team had won the championship, we came over and played a couple of preseason games. Actually, no, that year we only played one. We played a preseason game against the Oklahoma City Thunder and lost by 1 point. And I had a shot that was, in my mind, goaltended with about 3 seconds left. They got blocked. And if it wasn't for that, we would have won the game. And this is not a normal preseason game. This is a game where Steven Adams is playing 36 minutes. This is a game where Paul George played 36 minutes. This is a game where Russell Westbrook played close to 30 minutes. So it's not a game that they're just playing their third and fourth string guys against us. This is a game that we're playing against the best of the best. Carmelo Anthony played 34 minutes in that game. So that should give you an indication of the level that this league is at. Now, and would I say that NBL teams could compete with NBA teams every night? No, that would be unfair. But it is a very, very high level. It really is.
So, well, that's kind of my next one is talent level.
Yeah, it's a toss-up between the NBL and EuroLeague. You know, there was actually the NBL was attempting to put together an event a couple of years ago, which would have had some of the EuroLeague teams come over to Australia and play against some of the NBL teams. And I think that would have been great because that really would have shown where the NBL level is at, because personally, I think it is very close to EuroLeague level. You know, I would say on any given night, some of the best teams in the NBL could probably beat some of the better teams over in EuroLeague. So it's a toss-up in my mind. It really is.
And, you know, a lot of that goes to exposure because everyone we've talked to, first league is EuroLeague, and then China usually comes up at second in there, never really bringing to mind Australia. And
listen,
so
the NBL over in Australia, they have played preseason games against Chinese teams, and they beat them by 60. The CBA talent level does not compare to the NBL in Australia. It's not a comparison. The CBA is nowhere near where the NBL is. The only difference is the CBA has a ton of money to throw at imports. That's the only difference. But talent-wise, it's not close. The NBL is far and away the better league.
One more topic or question. It's a topic we haven't really talked about, but usually comes up with the athletes, and that's safety. Which one did you say you probably felt the safest? Or at the flip side, if there was ever one of you felt kind of the most uncomfortable, that's important too for players to hear.
So here's a funny story. Over in Turkey, I played for Karşıyaka. We played in, why am I having a blank on the city that we played in? Jesus. Oh my God, I can't remember city. But anyway, maybe, I don't know, couple of weeks after I left. I don't know if you remember, but there was a mass shooting in a Turkish nightclub. There was a mass shooting.
Okay.
A couple of days after that, they arrested close to 20 ISIS members in my town that I was living in Turkey. And the following day, there was a shootout and a car bombing at a courthouse with a few other ISIS members. So Izmir, that's the name of the town. So Izmir in Turkey. This was the town I was playing in. Very nice resort coastal town in western Turkey. The issue is that this was the time frame when ISIS was at its peak. And what would happen is that ISIS members would come in from the southeastern portion of the country, posing as refugees. They would make their way through the country, go to Izmir, and then blend in with refugees that were going on rafts from Izmir into South Central Europe. So Izmir was actually an ISIS transport hub into Europe.
Wow.
So yeah, it was you didn't necessarily see it every day, but there were certainly some things that happened while I was there, and more so just after I left, that they dealt with in Izmir. So yeah, that would be the place that I felt the least safe, I would say.
I would be shocked if there was one that made you feel less safe than that.
Yeah.
How about Eastern Europe sometimes get a bad rap. Did you feel safe in Estonia?
Yeah. There was no safety issues in Estonia whatsoever. Really no safety issues when I was in Russia either. I lived in Khimki. I lived maybe a 15 to 20 minute ride outside of the center of Moscow. And Moscow is just the kind of place you just have to kind of know where you are. You know, there's certain areas that are very nice, that, you know, are very touristy. There are areas that would be considered dangerous. And as long as you know where those areas are and, you know, you stay either out of them or you stay very vigilant at night, then you don't have issues. You know, I never had any issues when I was playing over in Russia. I do know people that have, but I didn't.
Okay. All right. I think that's most of the big topics we like to hit. Josh, is there anything you think? Now, obviously, you wrote a blog, which was awesome. And so you obviously have the passion to tell young players about these experiences. Anything that we haven't covered in our hour here about playing basketball overseas that you think that they need to know?
I mean, look, it's a great experience. I've gotten to see some places that I never would have gotten to see otherwise. You know, I probably never would have traveled to Australia. I never would have went to Bahrain. You know, I've gotten to travel to a lot of great places. And I'm incredibly thankful for it. I've gotten to meet so many different people of so many different cultures. You know, I've become very worldly, honestly, yeah, in doing this. But there are certain things that you have to accept when you're playing overseas, like the fact that it's very difficult to have a relationship. The fact that, you know, if you have a family, either they're going to have to move with you or you're going to be without them for large portions of time. The fact that you might get cut any day if you're not performing well, or if the team just decides that they want to go in a different direction. You know, there's a lot of instability with playing overseas, and it's something that you have to know in advance. That's what you're getting yourself into. You know, it's hard. It is really, really hard to be a professional basketball player overseas, because there are so few jobs and there's so many guys that are trying to get these jobs. You know, obviously it's damn near impossible to get in the NBA. You're talking, you know, 450 people out of however many, but you have to think, you know, a lot of the people playing basketball don't even have the NBA as an option. So you're not even having to beat those people. Those are the people that you're having to beat out overseas. And there's a lot more of them than the people that you're having to beat out to get into the NBA and to, yeah, stay in the NBA. So it's hard, man. It's hard. It's a really, really difficult way to make a living, even though at the end of the day, you're playing a game to make a living. You know, it's always frustrating for me for people to say, oh, you know, you don't have a real job. Well, yeah, it is a real job. And not only is it a real job, it's a real job that I have to deal with a lot more other things than you have to deal with on the regular.
I don't know who would tell you that. I don't know. I have
people tell me that all the time.
Well, they're wrong. I mean, I don't even play it.
You just play a game. Yeah, but you have no idea what goes into playing this game. Trust me.
Josh, we appreciate it. This was a fantastic. It really was. We really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
So there's not a whole lot to add to that interview. It was in depth. It was long, as you noticed, which was great. I love that, because then it's just a wealth of information out there for you. You can take what you need. So a special thanks to Josh for taking all that extra time for a very special interview. I think in general, if there's something to conclude this all, it's that we've learned so far that your time overseas is very different. There was that piece where, you know, I stopped and I said, hey, for some of our listeners, they need to maybe understand that when you're talking about a missed month's payment, that can be a lot more than they're thinking. And Josh goes, actually, it might be a lot less than what they're thinking. And to be honest with you, I think it could be both, because there's this vast range of opportunities. There's this vast range of, you know, pay scale, contract setups, and all this stuff. I think it could be a little bit of both. I think there can be listeners out there that are picturing a low number and they're too low. And there are people thinking way too high. So I do think it's a little bit of both. And that's why we bring in such a variety of people, not only different sports, but different countries and different leagues and different calibers. Like I said in the intro, Josh by far has the strongest resume, at least out of our basketball players, to go play overseas. And so he, as you heard, brought us all different information than we've gotten from our other basketball players. And so I think that is kind of the best way to sum this up, is that you may have listened to a basketball interview before, but it's not the same. Each one of these stories is different because of a variety of different things. They have different past experiences. They have different resumes. They have different countries they go to. They get paid differently. All of this stuff. No two stories are the same. And so we need all of these stories together. And the more stories you get, the stronger your understanding is going to be about those opportunities that are out there. Because there's so many and they're so varied, you can't accurately get an understanding of what those opportunities are with one story, two stories, three stories. You need a bunch of them to really help you, help all of us, fully understand what those opportunities look like. I think that's kind of the best way to sum it up. You know, we need as many stories as possible. You need as many stories as possible to help understand those opportunities. So thank you, Josh, for your time. I very much appreciate it. Thank you to all you listeners. And of course, thank you to all our sponsors for your help and your support. We're able to do it because of, you know, everyone I just listed, our interviewees, our listeners, and our sponsors. So thank you all very much, and you will hear from us all next time. Thank you all for making it through another episode. A couple things I got a quick run through and then we'll be done. First, if you haven't already, go ahead and follow us on our different key platforms. First, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/globallyballin. Also, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, and then Twitter at globallyballin. The Instagram and Twitter are by far our most active, and they're also very different content. They're actually run by different people. So go ahead and make sure you're following both of those, and they'll also both alert you for when something new is posted either in the podcast or Patreon, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. Also, when it comes to the Facebook account seems less active, and we're aware of that. It's different kind of content and more is coming to the Facebook page, so you'll want to like it to make sure you're ready when a new wave of different content, which is coming soon, starts to make its way on there, which is exciting. Finally, though, is the Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com and then you search Globally Ballin, you're going to find our account. $3 a month, and with that, you're going to get a couple of things. First, shout out to all the supporters, which is great, which is actually also really good for any of you athletes out there. It's a great way to get your name, your brand, your place where people can find your highlight tapes, all that stuff. That'll be plugged in our episodes, which is great. So if you become a patron for the $3 a month, you'll get that. In addition, though, what we're really kind of excited about, not that we're not excited about the other one, is that you're going to get a bunch of extra content. It's going to be different from when I originally recorded this to when you're listening to this now. We're going to keep adding to it. There's a lot of different stuff. It might just be extra stuff that didn't fit into an episode. And there's also a whole new, different kind of content called Candid Conversations, which is basically a whole new show that we started. As the name suggests, it's a conversation between me and somebody else. For whatever reason, it doesn't fit into an episode. And if you go check out one of those Candid Conversations, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So that $3 a month, you're going to get your shout out and your help to support your brand or get attention to your highlight reel or whatever, plus a lot of extra detailed, fun content in addition to this free podcast. So go and check that out. Refresher, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/globallyballin, Instagram at globallyballinofficial, Twitter at globallyballin, and Patreon, patreon.com, search globallyballin, and you'll find, do the $3 a month patron if you're interested, and get all new content, a bunch of additional content. If that's not for you, totally fine. We still really appreciate you supporting and listening. If you have any suggestions, make sure you send us a message. Again, because we're most active on Instagram and Twitter, that's the best way to send us a suggestion. We'd be happy to listen and try to get anybody in that area and that sport, that country, that topic that'll help you best. So make sure you send us one of those requests. Otherwise, thank you again for listening. You'll hear from us again next week.